Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today, we welcome Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Eilerigs of the Berry Patch. If you have a question about getting your garden or lawn prepped for fall, it's getting to be that time. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Gardening's a popular one, so call early or email early. voxpop@wamc.org is email. Number is 800-348-2551. Fred, Bob, and Dale Isla, your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardeners are back today. They're ready to take your calls. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Dale Eilerigs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. If you have a gardening question, feel free. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. We have a few of those already. The number is 800-348-2551. That's about all the information you need right now. Bob Graves, how are you?
Hey, I am great. I just wanted to give a plug to Fred in the Landis Arboretum. I drove out there to drop off some stuff for their plant sale, and if you haven't been there, you're really missing something.
Wow, that's nice.
It is spectacular. Yeah. Unbelievable, beautiful out there.
Fantastic.
Thanks a real lot, Bob, and thanks for your support.
If you haven't been there, it's worth the
effort. Did he pay you for that? Because that's illegal in public radio.
No, I really was astounded.
Okay. Well, that's great. Dale Isla, what's happening at the Berry Patch, don't you know?
All sorts of things. It's time to be getting lime on the fields and soil testing and doing some weed maps. And our tomatoes have come back from summer vacation, so we suddenly have zillions of tomatoes again.
You brought about, five different varieties here?
Five different cherry tomatoes, but our heirloom tomatoes are going crazy.
Really?
They took that hot weather off and... now they're back.
So it was a good year for tomatoes?
Yes.
So your soil is fairly acidic?
Over time it can get acidic. So we actually rent a bunch of our fields to another farm, and we noticed when we were out in the fields yesterday that they had lime applied probably on Tuesday.
What pH do you put your lime down? How low do you let it get?
Usually, it depends what
crop,
is being the next crop, but I don't really like to let it get below about 6.3.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Everything, almost anything's good around mid-sixes.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Yep. For sure.
Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Did the plant sale happen?
It happened. Was successful, and it's over now. And we didn't even miss a beat. We're kicked right back into more groundwork, and we kind of like this time of year because we get to do a lot of things that we just don't have time to do during the really growing season and with all the events that we have running at the Arboretum. So the big thing that we're pushing now is we've been battling invasives. We've done a good job, with the grounds crew and stuff. So common buckthorn is one of our biggest ones.
Oh,
the honeysuckle, bush honeysuckle.
It's everywhere.
And some black locust. So this time of year, we really start cutting, and we rent chippers, and we start chipping it all up and stuff. So we're really starting to get ready for that. The biggest problem has been, chasing trees that we planted at the tail end of that wet spring, and it has been a dry summer. It has been unbelievably dry.
Basically, we haven't had any rain in months.
We really haven't. The pond levels are low, and anything that we put in the ground, the guys have just been following them around with a water wagon a couple of times a week. And
people don't realize it's really important for plants to go into the winter well hydrated.
Well hydrated.
They don't want to go into the winter dry because they lose moisture. Even deciduous plants that lose their leaves lose moisture in the winter.
Yep, and they do a lot of that storage at the end of the summer.
Into the early fall. Yeah.
So they really, it's very important to get them hydrated. Yep. So that's, something that we've really been dealing with. And we're waiting for a break in the weather so we can plant a bunch more plants to a bunch of natives.
Yeah.
So
Usually September, you say it's a great time to plant because it rains.
Well, that's usually the case.
Not
yet. Yeah. Not yet. Yeah, we have a lot of stuff to put in, but like I said, we're not putting them in yet. We're, you know, I wish we. It's been a challenging season, but it's been a good season.
Maybe we'll get some rain next week. I heard tell that we might get some. So
I'm hoping. It's staying a little bit cooler, so it's helping. You know, the water
down. And you get some dew at night, which for some things like grass helps a little.
A little bit.
Not much.
Yeah, we usually say, you know, seeding lawns.
Now's
right
the time.
Right, but if you don't have an irrigation system in there, you really.
Yeah, if you can't
let it dry out.
Grass now, don't plant it.
Exactly.
It's not coming up.
Nope.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and Bob Graves. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Jeffrey wrote in, I purchased several rhododendrons in the spring. Some plants had flowers when I bought them. Now none of the plants have buds for next year. What can I do to help with new blooms? And that's from Jeffrey in Coxsackie.
Well, you know, they generally set up flower buds for the following year after they bloom. So it makes me almost wonder if something maybe browsed off some of those buds.
Yeah, it could be. You know, I find a lot of times with flowering plants, once you put them in the ground, they're so happy to be in the ground rather than in a pot that they put out a lot of foliar growth. And sometimes they'll skip flowering. And because the foliage is what provides them with energy, the flowers take energy. So when they're newly planted, sometimes they say, I'm going to skip flowering.
We'll skip that season. Yeah, that's a good point as well. Yeah.
So water them and fertilize them now is the best you can do. Yep. You're not going to have flowers next year because the buds aren't there.
If there's no flower buds now, there won't be anything you can do
but
for
this year.
But you
keep them strong so that next year they set flowers.
You got it.
Right. All right, Suzanne writes in, I have two questions regarding the drought and my perennial gardens and planting spring bulbs. I received 2 inches of rain in 11 weeks. I live in Greenwich, New York. I've watered the gardens, but still I'm worried about their recovery and next year. Second, I always odor? That can't be. Please check your spelling. I always O-D-E-R and plant new, maybe order. Yeah.
Order.
And plant new bulbs in early November. Should I plant them under these drought conditions? That's a very worried Suzanne. That's from her.
Good questions.
Yeah, it depends on what the weather does a little bit. But, you know, the way the weather's been the last few years, it hasn't frozen much until December or January in some places.
Yeah.
So as long as you get the stuff in the ground and you water it, it'll start to do things. If you can keep it hydrated, you don't have to wait till it rains, particularly if you can irrigate it a little bit.
Yeah, if you can apply some water, then the bulbs should be able to establish. It's just a matter of, like, when start, you know, you really need some moisture in that ground. But, you know, it is getting cooler, and it is easier to keep the moisture in the ground a little bit better.
Yeah, because the sun's lower.
Yep.
In the morning and in the evening, and you get a little dew. So
yeah, and you still have time too. So they want it to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta think this weather's gonna break soon.
Yeah, it's also this would be a great time to put in a drip irrigation system.
Yeah,
you know the sites that are dry and where your plants are, and it's really it's not a difficult thing to do at all. You can buy kits from a lot of different companies and. And they'll help you design it.
And there's no waste with drip.
Exactly.
Nope. No, it's
waste.
And, you know, you're running it off just an outside faucet, so you're not, it's pretty low water use.
Yeah.
And this is the year to do that.
Okay.
It certainly is. You could also do like a seeper hose, too, which if
soaker
you don't want to do a whole irrigation system, you could, I am planting these shrubs. Instead of standing out there, if you have a regular, you know, hose connection, just hook a seeper hose to your
hose has holes in it?
It just kind of soaks. Yeah, soaker hose, seeper hoses. They're perforated.
Yeah.
And they'll just slowly emit. There's sort of an end. It has a plug in the end, and it just slowly releases water.
I tell them, if you're standing there with a hose watering something, you're not giving it enough.
It's going to be tough unless you're a real patient.
You've got to stand there a long time.
You're not kidding.
To soak it.
And, you know, drip irrigation is great. You can turn it on. Actually, it's on my raspberry plants right now while I'm here.
Uh-huh.
Just walk away.
All right. Lisa in Plattsburgh writes, what will grow here? We have very sandy soil. We tried to replace some patchy crabgrass in the back with wildflowers native to our region. These have sometimes done well, but need reseeding yearly, and we're losing patience. Any ideas for other... oh, gosh. What's this word here, Bob? I've never even heard of that one. Last sentence.
Xeriscape.
It has an I in it?
Yeah. Xeriscape.
Okay. So what is that?
That's planting things that don't need water.
Okay. Yep. All right. So what's the word?
Well, there are grasses that do much better in dry ground than others. So, you know, some of the sheep fescues or some of the tall fescues that have really deep roots. In sandy ground, it's really tough if you can't water. You know, there's some shrubs that'll do well. There's some perennials that'll do pretty well.
Yeah, and while there are plants that they don't take much water, all plants still need water to get, especially to get established.
Yeah.
Some of the native ground covers, you know, we just happen to inherit a lot of wild thyme at our farm, and it's a really low-growing, very small herb, and it looks great this summer. It's been blooming away. You don't have to mow it. It stays so low, and it's on a very sandy, acidic slope, never gets water, and it's doing great.
Yeah, so. And there are a lot of trees and shrubs that also don't require a lot of water as well. In fact, there's a lot that prefer dry and kind of, you know, harsh sites. But as you mentioned, they are going to require water to get them established.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, no matter what you put in right now, you're going to need to put a water on it. But once they are established, there's a lot of stuff. If you do some research
even
on
things
this.
Like rugosa roses, which some people call beach roses.
Yep.
They'll grow in sand.
Yep.
Once you get them established.
Yep, yep. Even like things like ninebark, you know, that'll take off like crazy. In fact, we got an unbelievable amount of growth this year on ninebark. And then on other things that even like a little bit more moisture, like Meta Sequoia or Don Redwood, you would think, well, you know, a year like this year, boy, they're going to be suffering. But we planted like probably 30 Don Redwoods or maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I got to tell you, they put more growth out this year than I've seen in a while. But again, these are fully established plants.
Right.
And we didn't put any supplemental irrigation on those trees.
Really, that growth came from the water we had early.
It probably
A lot of plants actually are suffering now because they put out a whole lot of growth early. And now they're having a little trouble supporting that growth.
That's right.
Because it got dry badly, so quickly.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so let's take a break, and then we want to try some of these tomatoes briefly before we get to the calls. 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs brought tomatoes from the Berry Patch. Fred Bregley is here from Landis Arboretum. He didn't bring anything, but he got some new WAMC socks. And Bob Graves is here from Fadigan's Nursery. As always, he brings his sterling wit. We'll be back. Matt Jorgensen, Tomorrow Never Knows, old Beatle classic here on Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. It's Gardening Today. Boy, do we have fun on this program, and we get to eat tomatoes and such. It's 800-348-2551. Andrea and Troy, you'll be first here. Just hang in for a minute. Dale Isla Riggs, you brought 5 different little cherry tomatoes, and they're all different colors.
Yeah, that's why I bring them. Two of them are red. One is called, the standard red one is one called Sakura.
I love that color red.
Oh, a really great deep red.
Yeah.
The other red one is actually a miniature plum tomato.
Look at that.
Called Verona. That is one of my favorites. I think the flavor of it is really outstanding. And then there's black cherry, well named. And then there's one, I love the name of it. It's my favorite name, called Chocolate Sprinkles.
Look at that.
It's kind of mottled in color, kind of a dark bronzy color with kind of dark golden stripes on it. And then everyone's, many people's favorite in one called Sun Gold.
Yep. Okay. The one from Verona, is that named after Verona, New York? Because that's where one of my favorite casinos is.
Well, we can hope so, but I suspect it's Verona, Italy.
Yeah. Ah. Okay. And so when Shakespeare wrote Two Gentlemen of Verona, it wasn't Two Gentlemen of Verona, New York?
You'd have to do a little research
okay.
to figure that
All
one
right.
out.
All right. The number, and I digress. Let's try a tomato.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you want? You're in charge.
Why don't we start with the standard reds?
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a standard red.
Yep. They're all cut in half.
Do you want one, Bob?
Ready to go.
Yeah. Have you been good? Here you go.
I've never been anything but good, right?
This is standard red.
Yep.
I can tell.
That's a good one.
Yep.
I like to put a little salt on mine.
Yeah. I had a little salt on them. Maybe you didn't get a piece that had salt on it.
I taste it.
No, I think I can taste it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. It brings out the flavor. It really does.
Yeah.
We had been given 2 tomato plants by our next-door neighbor, Eileen, and we got It was late in the season. We got one cherry tomato. It was delicious. We sliced it up and put salt. Everybody had a little taste. Now we have two or three more that are. I don't know if they're going to ripen. They're big enough now. The one's a plum tomato and one's a cherry tomato.
They probably will.
They'll ripen.
Yeah. Just got to give them a little more time, but they'll come.
All right, let's continue. That's delicious. Let's continue to talk tomatoes. We'll go to Drea and Troy. Go ahead, you're on.
Hi. I actually have a really nice crop of cherry tomatoes this year, but my question is about my Roma tomatoes. I have several varieties of plum tomatoes, and they get really nice and ripe on the bottom half, but up around the stem, they just stay yellow and hard, even though the rest of the tomato is really ripe. What am I doing wrong?
You're not doing anything wrong. That's a trait of a lot of the older, more heirloom-type varieties of plum tomatoes. It can be a little bit, you'll get a little bit more of that if there's a potassium deficiency. So you might want to test your soil and see what the potassium levels are like. And it's never a bad idea when the tomatoes start to, a little before they start to ripen, to start adding some extra potassium.
Does the potassium do, Dalila?
It helps it ripen more uniformly, and it helps with tomato flavor.
Really?
A lot.
And
yeah.
Is there too much? Can you put too much on?
It depends on the size of the plant, but I think that would be really hard to put on too much. What? I mean, you always can, and if you put on so much that you wound up with a salt problem, yeah, that's too much.
What do you use for your potassium source?
We just use a soluble fertilizer. Plant finisher that has just a low amount of nitrogen in it, no phosphorus,
and a bunch of potassium.
Lot of potassium.
What do you think, Drea?
That sounds great. I actually do use potash, and I will increase my amount of potash. So thank you so much.
Yeah, the other thing you can do if you really want to get into the science is you can actually send in tissue samples to see if the plant is deficient in potassium or not.
How do you cut a tissue sample without killing a plant?
You can take individual leaves off. You collect about 15 leaves and send it off to a plant analysis lab, and for $15, you get your answer.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. It's gardening today, 800-348-2551. I got to try a different tomato now. What's the second one on our list?
So try the black cherry.
Black cherry. You want one, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Have you been good? Here you go.
What are you going to do if I say no?
Then you don't get a tomato.
No tomato for you.
Oh, that's different. Wow.
Yeah, it is a lot different.
Some spicy spice. Mm.
I think that's why, you know, I like doing the taste testing, because people just don't know how different. It's like a cherry tomato is a cherry tomato, but it's
not. That's amazing. So how would you describe that taste?
I'm looking for descriptors from you guys.
I would put this on a pizza pie sauce. I got to tell you, that seems like it would go great with pepperoni.
That sounds really
good. Oh, gosh. All right. Yeah. Well, those are two goodies, Dale Isla. It's gardening today with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and Bob Graves. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Kate is in Kinderhook. Hello, Kate.
Hi. I have a question about storing seeds or how to even replant a plant. I bought this extraordinary pepper called black pearl pepper. I got it at the local co-op. It looks like a decorative plant. It has black leaves. The peppers are black until they ripen to a kind of beautiful red.
Yep.
But I think it's an engineered plant because it's so kind of wacky. And I'm wondering, do you think I could save the seeds and grow one next year?
So you would need to find out if it's a hybrid or not. A hybrid is two different specific parents that are always crossed so that you get a uniform fruit from the children, the plant that you're growing. If it's a hybrid, saving the seeds, that you're not going to get it true from seed. But if it's an open pollinated pepper, sure, you could save those. And peppers don't need a lot of cross-pollination. So if it's open pollinated, there's a good chance that you'd get something that would resemble it pretty closely.
And the seeds like that would have to be stratified over the winter in order to germinate the next year?
Not that I've seen.
No.
Like with tomatoes, we ferment them so there's not as many diseases, and then let them dry and put them in the freezer.
Gotcha.
There you go. Kate, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. It's The Gardening Show, and Pam is in Western Massachusetts. Pam, go ahead.
Hi. I have lots of allergies, and I love flowers and gardening and things like that. There is a book that's written to establish, like, low pollen-based trees and shrubs and grasses and things like that. Is there anything specific to Western Massachusetts that I can reference, a pamphlet, anything?
Well, I have no knowledge on that topic.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that either.
I have to research that.
That would be something to kind of do a bit of research on. I mean, I would not doubt that there is some information out there.
If you find some and you check the zoning, you know, if it's a zone 4 or zone 5 or a zone 3 plant, sure, it would grow in Western Mass. That's really your main concern is whether it's hardy in the temperature zone.
Right. So if you research plants, if you found, if you had something that was saying, you know, these plants in these zones don't produce a lot of pollen, then they, you know, along with like what Bob said, if it's like 5, you know, basically zone 5 or colder, then you probably have a lot of those plants. And they would work, too, for your area, anything that is zone 5 or, you know, you could even get away with probably some zone 6 stuff.
You might be able to in Western Mass.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of zone 6 things, even at Atlantis. I think there's, last I counted, over 45 different species of plants that we have at Atlantis that are actually 45. Zone 6. Yeah,
and for annual flowers, there are, at least in sunflowers, you can get pollenless sunflowers. They're often used in the cut flower trade, but there are some varieties, and in the seed catalogs, it will actually say pollenless.
So if you're looking
for annual flowers, the plant descriptions should tell you pretty clearly.
All right.
Okay.
Pam, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Terry in Selkirk writes, I'd like to plant a full sun perennial garden that blooms spring to fall. Is it better to buy all the plants in the beginning of the season and plant them all at one time, or wait as the year progresses to buy plants while they are blooming and then plant them?
Yep. So you could kind of do either way. But when I've designed perennial gardens, what I do is I measure out the space, and then you can use like that classic grid paper, and then you can draw it to scale, sketch to scale your garden, and then figure out what plants you want. And then what I do is I do three overlays. So you spring, summer, fall. You could even include winter, but spring, summer, fall. Throw an overlay over top of that graph paper, and then you'll draw, you know, little circles or drifts of sorts to, you know, indicate what plant, you know, would be all your spring bloomers. Generally, if it's a garden that's going to have a backdrop like a house, I generally would put the taller stuff in the back and the shorter stuff in the front. But by doing the overlays, you could sort of space out all your spring bloomers and then throw another overlay and put all your summer bloomers and then put another overlay and put all your fall bloomers, and you'll have all those spots covered. Because the main thing you want to do is make sure you have seasonal interest. And, you know, that's a really good way to do it. So in terms of installing those plants, you know, it doesn't matter if you do them all at once or if you know, depending on availability, you may have to stagger them in.
That's something I would say is there's a couple things about when you get them. Yep. If you want to see how they look in flower, you need to buy them when they're in flower.
Yep.
And also for someone like ourselves in a nursery, we tend to have the things that look best at any particular time of year. So we don't have a lot of the fall stuff first thing in the spring, because it doesn't look like much.
Good point.
If you want to see what it looks like, you're right, design's got to be done ahead of time because you got to know what you're doing.
Yep.
But in terms of finding them, you may want to do that over the course of the year.
Yeah, that's a good point. You could actually install them like spring, then wait to see what the garden centers have in summer, and then go and see with the fall. And, you know, you don't always have to pick the names of everything. You could just indicate on this sort of a, you know, base map, you could say spring bloomers. And you can give heights. Yeah. A lot of times I like to say, you know, find a role the plant's going to play and then find something to plug into it. So if I want a 24-inch perennial that's going to bloom in the spring, you know what you're getting in terms of that. And you need to know your sun exposure, and you also recommend highly, as Dalila has mentioned many times, soil test, you know, pH testing. So if you're starting a new garden, get a pH test, because if the pH is off, you want to try to adjust that while you can.
Okay, it's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. All right, Dale Isla, tomato number three. This is a cherry tomato. It looks like your standard cherry tomato.
Well, this is the one that's actually a miniature plum, so it's not round like what I think of for a cherry tomato.
Oh, yeah. It's, I have a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. But it's nice and meaty, and it's my favorite.
Oh, that's delicious.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's
good.
Very nice.
Well, I haven't had a bad one yet.
Yeah, you're right.
No, it's really cool to have them each, you know, if like you said before, if you had just one of these and then you tried another one later, you're not going to see it.
No.
But if you have them side by side, and, you know, we do things even like that at the Arboretum. We have, like, our native plant trail. We'll have all the maples around, or the oak collection.
Yeah.
We'll have all these oaks. And they're all side by side. So someone will say, well, what's the difference between a, you know, a swamp white oak and a regular white oak? And when you look at those two leaves and side by side, it's night and day. Same as a black maple versus sugar maple.
We'll get back to the calls in a moment. We have an email here from Rick Orlando. Chef Orlando will be on my show tomorrow on the Food Friday. Don't forget, Rick. Rick writes in, a tomato ripening trick. I've been hearing your calls from people with tomatoes then that they're not sure going to ripen. Use a trick I learned in Italy. Instead of picking them and putting them in a bag, which does work, you pull the plant out by the roots and hang it upside down and let it ripen on the vine with the roots above the tomato. It continues to draw energy from the roots and the plant while it ripens, and they're much more delicious. Obviously, some heirlooms are really tall, and it makes it a little complicated. I hang them from a pipe in the basement, but that trick works. I do it every year.
Okay.
Good point. That's a good one.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I wonder what his house looks like. You know, I've often wondered about that.
Or the smell of tomato foliage as it dries down. Yeah. We wind up actually harvesting tomatoes into late November because we grow them undercover. So we just let them keep going.
Let them go.
And then we're eating tomatoes until Christmas.
Now, I didn't know. Should we take those green tomatoes off and let them ripen in a bag?
You can. I never bother with the bag. We just have them sitting out
but
on a
I
counter.
I should take them off the plant, or I have my gardener do it.
Only when, I say only when frost is threatening.
It's going to be a while
with
for
the farmers. Farmers will do, if he's got a lot of green tomatoes and it looks like we got a frost, he's going to go out and harvest them all and put them undercover.
I got
because
you.
Why not?
Right, but otherwise I'd leave them on until we start to hear about frost dangers.
Yeah. All right, let's grab another call or two before the next break. It's Gardening Today, 800-348-2551. We go to Glenmont. Rose, you're on.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Zach, the engineer, loves it when this happens, by the way. Yeah. Hi. Hello. Hi. All right, go ahead.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. I'm calling about an apple tree we planted about 5 or 6 years ago, and it finally had apples this year. And an apple fell, so I took it and cut it open, and the seeds were brown. So I said, oh, they're all ripe. So I picked the whole tree, which, you know, wasn't a huge amount, but... and then afterwards, I read that the Liberty apples, which this is a Liberty apple tree, aren't ready to harvest until October. So I'm just wondering, you know, if I just let these sit, will they continue to ripen? You know, or have I just wasted them?
Yeah, they will continue to ripen some. You'll probably lose some of the texture over time by them not fully ripening. And they probably will not be as sweet. But as far as fruit goes, apples are one of the better things to ripen if they've been picked a little bit young.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And a lot of times see that even in stores, you know, a lot of those apples are picked definitely in advance of their true ripening. And that's sometimes why those store apples also don't taste quite as good as the, you know, ones that you get in the orchard, but they still taste pretty good and it still works. So I think, you know, you're going to be able to, you know, do pretty good with that.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Rose. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question for Bob, Dale, Isla, and Fred. And let's go to Clifton Park. Cindy's on. Hello, Cindy.
Hi. I have actually two questions, one different plants. The first one's about a sand cherry or plum cherry. The development I'm in planted forsythia and sand cherry around the transformer in front of the house.
Yeah.
And for several years, it's been kind of doing less and less well. The forsythia does great. I gave it some general food you know, sprinkled around, and it still isn't real happy. I know they've got a lifespan of like maybe 15 years, but is there anything I can do to kind of encourage it to come back?
In my opinion, that's a really lousy plant. It deteriorates, it gets fungus, it gets insect. I don't sell it anymore.
Yep.
Really?
It's beautiful when it's ripe, but it deteriorates pretty quickly from disease and insect. I would replace it whenever you get ready because it's never going to look like much.
Okay. So my other quick question is just I got a purple Cherokee tomato plant. It's growing on my deck because I don't have any space. How big do they get?
Purple Cherokee.
The fruit, because I'm not sure when to pick it. It's always green on top.
Yeah,
and,
the purple Cherokees do stay green on top. That part is not going to turn color. That is a feature of purple Cherokee. But the bottom will become quite a deep, deep purple color. And those fruit can be anywhere from 2 to 5 inches in diameter, depending on how much water they've gotten, the nutrition, et cetera. So what you're looking for more is the color on the bottom of the fruit. I will say that purple Cherokee cracks really easily. So when it starts to turn that purplish color, I suggest picking it off then and let it finish ripening on your counter because you will still get good flavor out of it when it's fully ripe.
All right, Cindy.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right, right before the break here, we tried the fourth tomato from Dale Isla at the Berry Patch. And this one is a cherry tomato, right?
Yes, this one's a cherry tomato called Chocolate Sprinkles. Ooh.
This has an amazingly, almost crunchy texture.
Yes, it's very firm. I think the flavor is a little bit, is also different than a standard cherry.
Yeah,
it is.
More complex. I just love the name.
Yeah.
And the productivity of these plants
really?
Is amazing. Yes.
Well, I think you have a magic touch, though, right?
Except one of our neighbors up the hollow buys a chocolate sprinkles from me every year because they talk about these zillions of chocolate sprinkles they get off one plant in a pot on their deck.
Well, we have one more to go, which we'll try after the break. But so far, my favorite is the second one,
the black cherry.
That is really good.
That is a winner.
That was really different.
Let's take a break here. If you have a gardening question, feel free. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Or VoxPop at WAMC.org. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. I almost called it Lockbox. I've been pitching in the morning for the Lockbox, and that is open right now. If you want to drop a buck or two or 10 or 100 or whatever, you can go to WAMC.org. Our on-air fund drive begins October 6th, and then it's fundraising all day long. The goal here is to shorten that up, and everybody's doing a fantastic job. I'm not sure where we are, but I think it's about $330,000 already. So that's pretty good. If you want to do your thing, do it now, WAMC.org. It's Vox Pop Gardening with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. Man, the tomatoes are good. Oh, boy. This email from Eileen in Rosendale. Why do flowers and tomatoes that have done little over the summer suddenly burgeon in September?
That is because what a lot of people don't understand is that a lot of plants don't like the hot weather either. And so when it was 90 degrees, 95 degrees, the plants just shut down. They close their stomates so that they're not losing excess water. And at least tomatoes will drop their blossoms when you have hot nights or hot days. If it gets above 90 degrees, tomato plants will drop their blossoms. And they just shut down. I lived in Missouri one summer, and nothing grew during the summer in our vegetable garden. It was spring, and it was fall. And as we have these hot summers, we're starting to experience more of the same thing.
We particularly notice it with roses. They love the cooler weather, and they sometimes bloom best in November. because it's you know, usually hydrated well at that point normally.
Yep.
But also they like the cool weather. They really
You can see. I mean, even the shade trees. You could see that the summer when it was that hot. I mean, you had people were asking me like, what's wrong with those leaves? You know, actually they're just kind of shutting down. They've kind of like closed a lot of those stalemates, so the water loss is just reduced.
You know,
as soon as it gets like a little bit of cooler, you'll see them kind of unfoil and they start to look kind of normal again.
Plants, in a sense, aren't stupid.
No, nope.
If the weather isn't conducive to their growing, they don't grow.
It makes sense. It's sort of. I always say plants and people. There's a lot of similarities. There are some differences too, but there might be more similarities than differences in a lot of
cases. Plants might be smarter. I'm not sure.
They might be.
You know, Dale Eiler, you brought up the blossoms on the tomatoes. Do you at the Berry Patch at your organization? Do you manually
pollinate
them?
No, we tomatoes are self-pollinated, and a lot of people do bring in a hive of bumblebees into a greenhouse. But wind movement, just moving the plant, will get the pollen. Since they are self-pollinated, it'll get the pollen from the male part of the flower to the female part of the flower. So I brought bumblebees in until one year. The bumblebees actually over-pollinated the flowers and overworked the flowers.
What happened?
And the flowers fell off, and we didn't have a first set of tomatoes.
Oh, wow. They actually overworked them to the point where they start to drop.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I said, I don't need to do this. I have a roof vent, and I have open sidewalls, and we'll just let the wind do it.
And you got enough wind breeze in there to do it.
I noticed a weird thing. I noticed with a lot of my hydrangeas that when they first bloomed, the honeybees were all over them. Then the honeybees went away, and now it's all bumblebees with the later flowers. Yeah,
I noticed with sedum, it was earlier, there wasn't much on them. They didn't have flowers. Then they started the first flower, and it was more bumblebees. But now they are covered with honeybees.
Yeah,
at the
it changes.
Arbor. Covered.
It seems to.
Covered.
Yeah.
I mean, I was pruning some nine bark yesterday, and there's sedum all around them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I could not believe how many bumblebees. I mean, nine out of ten bees.
We don't often think of bumblebees as pollinators. You always think of honeybees.
But... Oh, see, that's interesting because most of the pollination on our farm is by bumblebees.
Okay.
Yeah. And bumblebees are a much more effective pollinator of blueberries. They can reach inside the blueberry blossom, whereas honeybees have to drill through the sides, they don't tend to actually do pollination. So we just have hundreds of thousands of bumblebees at our place.
And they're
it's
not
really
as aggressive
great.
Either, are they?
As long as you don't step on their
on a ground home. Nest.
Ah, yeah. Fair enough.
Yep.
Well, I'll try not to. Alice writes in, and by the way, if you want to call, there's still a little time left here, about 15 minutes, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Alice writes in with a few ideas for the emailer who wanted ideas for dry, sandy soil. I had good luck, says Alice, with bearberry as a ground cover. It's native to the Northeast, hardy, and was not hard to establish. Blazing Star is a good flowering plant choice for that soil condition. Have a good day. And that's from Alice. Well, what do you think, panel?
Well, bearberry for sure. I mean, it lives. It's a native plant. It lives in extremely dry, barren soils. It's it's also got a lot of medicinal uses in there too for that plant.
Mm. All right.
So yeah, and Blazing Star, I know, is not too fussy. So it'll grow in good conditions, but it'll grow in dry conditions.
What about beech plum?
I was wondering about that too.
Yeah, that would
probably see them at the beach, and that's sand, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, there's really a lot of things that will tolerate dry. It's just a matter of getting them established. So, once they're established, as like I said, bald cypress, typically grows in the south, and it's one of those water plants. And if you've ever seen cypress in the water with the big knees that come out of the water, it can tolerate literally standing water. But that same plant can actually be planted as a street tree in one of those 5x5 pits in bone dry soil with no water once it's established. That's an example of a really adaptable tree. It'll grow from Florida to Maine and pure water to dry. So, it really does. But there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a big list.
Teresa writes in with a question about pear trees. I want pear trees, but I only have room for two. I'm in zone four. Any recommendations?
Depends on what kind of pears you like. Any of them will grow. It's just you got the little seckle pears that are hard, and you got the type you see in the grocery store, and there's red ones, and there's green ones, and there's yellow ones.
And they'll all grow in zone four?
In zone four, yeah, absolutely.
And they're another example of a plant that can tolerate drought. You know, so, you know, apples are too. They can actually tolerate quite
a bit of
drought.
Little easier to, at least in my experience, a little easier to grow than apples.
I think you're right. Pears seem to be a bit more adaptable.
Where there were pear trees and apple trees, and the pear trees live longer, produce, didn't do anything to them.
And a little bit less problems, too.
Less problems.
Yeah.
In a year like this, some fungus problems. But much less insect problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, although they do get fire blight.
In a wet year. What's fire blight?
Fire blight is a bacterial disease that goes after pears.
And I think this year was bad.
It was very bad.
Yep. Yeah. It can get apples as well. Yeah. It can get a lot of the fruit trees, cherries.
It's also the calorie pears, too. The municipalities have planted so many calorie pears by where we are. And I know down south it's worse. But they're a mess.
What's a calorie pear?
It's an ornamental pear.
Ah.
You know, most people know the name Bradford, but that one hasn't been used for decades. There are new ones, but they're suffering this year.
Which is not maybe a bad thing because, you know, calorie pears are really not a great plant to be installed at this point.
So why would the municipalities put them in then?
Because they're adaptable and they tolerate really those drought conditions. They tolerate those compact, you know, soils.
A lot of varieties are fairly narrow.
Yep.
So they use them between highway.
Ah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Popular plants. After 9/11, actually, the first plant that was the plant that survived 9/11 was a calorie pear.
Oh, okay.
And it's been cloned and put into different 9/11 sites.
Yeah. Back to the question about what type of pear tree to put in. I actually prefer a seckle pear for a homeowner.
I like seckles.
They're really sweet. They store for a long time. We have a pear tree that got, you know, like 25 feet tall, and we can't prune it at the top, and I don't think the seckles get that tall.
It's a nice, it's fairly small, but it's hard, and it's really crunchy.
Yeah, and they hold for a long time, so
pears don't last real long after you harvest.
Especially Bartlett's.
Especially Bartlett's.
Camise pears are really difficult to get to ripen properly, so I would either do a seckle pear or a bosque.
Okay. Delilah, that last tomato is really fascinating. It starts out sweet, and then it's got some tang and some spice to it. What is that one?
So that one is Sun Gold, which most people that shop at farmers markets know about Sun Gold tomatoes. Super sweet. People will eat them like candy, but like you say, the taste kind of changes.
Yeah, it's complex for sure.
Yeah.
Good stuff. John, we'll go right back to the phones. John in Greenwich writes in, I used blood meal last year on a raised bed after a test said low iron. Crops did better than ever. Should I use it again or wait a year? I used 3 cups last year in a 5x10 raised bed. And that's from John in Greenwich. What is blood meal again? I'm sorry.
It's dried blood.
No way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a nitrogen source and an iron source.
Yeah, I would do another soil test.
Find out.
You know, it's easy to and inexpensive to do a soil test because you don't want to accumulate some of these nutrients.
Wow. And it's easy to kind of
the blood. This is kind of scary.
Slaughterhouses.
Really? And they just pick it up and make it into blood meal.
They dry it out and process it. Yeah. It's a fertilizer.
Okay.
You know, Native Americans. It's been used for a long time.
Native Americans used to bury a fish with their crops. You know,
they did.
Same idea.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. The problem with burying a fish with your crop is that animals sometimes will dig that fish back up and your crop.
Oh,
from experience.
Let's go back to the phones. It's Nancy in Boston Spa. Nancy, you're on.
Hi, guys. Question about clearing a woodlot, lots of honeysuckle, buckthorn, some of your favorites, I know, even a Japanese maple that kind of half died. When I'm trimming out, obviously I'm not going to leave the buckthorn seeds, but can I leave all the other growth matter to be like a mulch, or should I clean it all out when I prune?
The seeds are the main culprit. You know, it's not going to vegetatively, like knotweed can actually vegetatively sort of take hold, but buckthorn generally don't. We at the Arboretum, we chip all of that into a mulch, and then we leave that in a pile and sort of cover it, and then we, you know, but I will say from the years of us doing it, I've never seen anything sprout from the piles of chips that we've accumulated. We've kind of just been watching them, so we don't actually use them for mulch. We've kind of just been monitoring them. And I will say that, you know, over the years, you know, through a chipper, I think it gets most of everything, and it doesn't seem to really
propagate. What you want to think about, too, though, is if you cut that stuff and leave it there, what you're going to want to do in the future is mow it, brush hog it or mow it.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to come back.
Yep.
If you leave all that stuff there, you can't mow it. And I'd clean it. That's, I've had a couple of areas, fields, where I've cleaned them. They were a mess. I mean, stuff that was six, yep. seven, eight, 10
Good
feet
point.
Tall. Uh-huh. And then be able to brush hog.
Yeah, and that's why we also, you know, that's why we chip them too, because yeah. it helps to get rid
get
of it all.
Of
and, you know, if you miss some seeds, you know, it usually blasts them too. So, you know,
well,
generally.
Well, this is a woodlot. Mm-hmm. It's a woodlot where we will not be mowing. I'm just trying to clear out the invasives to allow for the oaks and the maples to take hold.
Yeah.
And I'm planting other things in. So I'm wondering if I leave all the woody matter, is that not a good mulch will turn into soil, or is it better to clean it all out?
You'd probably be all right with it, you know, leaving it.
Okay.
You know, and if you are cutting it and, you know, you're not really doing anything else, just clearing it, cutting it, then your best target time mm-hmm. is going to be springtime, because right now we're talking about water and plants because they want to store for winter. Mm-hmm. It's not just water that they're storing. It's energy that they're storing and carbohydrates. And so that's all for next year's reflush. So next year when it grows out, it has no leaves. How does it get leaves? Well, it uses that stored energy to put new leaves on, and then it counts on those leaves to photosynthesize and make energy and keep
okay.
the plant going. So if you wait till the spring after, I'm not saying if you cut it now, you're going to be wasting your time, but you're going to get a lot more regrowth in the spring because it's already stored a lot of energy in those
right.
roots. But if you let it use that energy up in the springtime, then come in and cut it, you're going to have a weaker plant, and then watch for more regrowth and
yeah.
cut it again. And
it's not a one and done. You're going to have to
right.
keep doing
yep,
that.
You are. You're going to have to cut it several times, okay. but you can wear these things out pretty easily, especially early spring when it first uses that energy. And that's, you know, probably going to be the, you know, you're going to get the best return on your investment.
In my experience, sometimes it'll take 5 years to get rid of some of that stuff. You just keep cutting and cutting and cutting.
Nancy, yeah. thank you for the call. Let's go to Burnt Hills, and it's Margaret's turn. Hello, Margaret.
Hello. You were asking about what to do with green tomatoes.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
You slice them up, bread them, and fry them.
Really? Are they good?
It's a southern delicacy.
Yeah, fried green tomatoes.
Fried green tomatoes.
Yeah, very good. Oh. As a matter of fact, there's also green tomato casseroles.
Huh.
They're
excellent.
They really are. I've had them before myself. That's my mom made them years ago. So, she, you know, it's good. Like I said, it's a southern delicacy. It's also a good
yeah.
movie, too.
Good suggestion.
I never saw the movie, and I never tried it. But thank you, Margaret. Appreciate the call. Well, let's go to Who's a Tonic, and let's talk to Chris. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Can you grow limes and lemons and papaya?
Can you grow? Chris, you've asked this question about 30 times in the last 2 years. Can we grow limes and papaya in this area? Anybody?
If you can put them inside in the wintertime, you can keep them going, but you can't leave them outside. If
yep.
they freeze, they die.
Yep, so, the limes you can do as a patio plant, and
right.
you can definitely bring them in. Papaya, I don't think you're going to have too good of luck in New York.
My grandmother had a patio plant, lemon. And
yep.
it did work.
It does.
It does
they
work.
Do. Yeah, a lot of people actually do grow like these
nice
citrus
sunny
plants
for the winter.
Yep. Yeah, but papaya, not
going to happen.
I don't think that's going to be the best one.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot. Let's go to Saugerties. Richard, you're on.
Yes.
Only about a minute.
I've got a half dozen boxwood. Hello?
Go ahead. You have about a minute, so let's roll it.
Okay. I've got boxwood trees, boxwood bushes. In several different locations, and it doesn't seem to matter if I water them or not, but partially they're turning brown, and I have to cut pieces out of them, and now they look like heck.
Boy, there could be a lot of problems there. There's some diseases, but there's also two or three different insects.
There are.
Yeah. Psyllid will do it. Spider mite will do it. We need to see a sample of that.
Yeah, but it's almost, if you're getting boxwood but brown and you've been watering, it's not going to be the water. It's probably
water.
Got an insect.
They're
my
pretty
guess
tolerant
is,
of drought.
They
so.
Are tolerant of drought. It's yeah. another one of those drought-tolerant
yeah.
plants. So, you know, not the water, but I would say you probably
uh-huh.
have some pathogen on there, whether it be fungal or insect.
Get that
or something.
To your extension office.
Yep.
So what kind of spray should I use?
It would need to ID that pest. So the best thing would be to do is, you know, take a few sections of it. And, if it's completely brown, it may not be the best sample.
Yeah.
But what I always do is take the ones that are kind of turning, take a little bit of healthy, take a little bit of the total brown, bag them up, and put them in a Ziploc bag and bring them to your extension if you have a local cooperative extension or an arboretum, or you could send it into Cornell University as well here in New York. But you want to ID it, because if it's a fungus, we can't really spray a pesticide. So you really want, you got to know what you're dealing with.
Hey, Richard, thanks for the call. You'll be the last one today. Fred Breglia, how do people find out about the Landis Arboretum?
Yeah, we're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website's landisarboretum.org.
And you guys are open through the whole year?
Yeah, 365 days a year, dawn to dusk, and and actually open free to the public. Donations are always accepted, and memberships always help keep us growing, but we are free.
Bob Graves, Fadigan's Nursery.
Yeah, Fadigan's.com, 2.5 miles west of the Northway on Route 7 near the airport road.
Delilah Riggs, thanks for the great tomatoes. How do people find out about the Berry Patch?
TheBerryPatch.net, or come see us at the Troy Farmers Market on Saturdays from 9 to 2.
You guys are fantastic. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Support comes from California Closets, Albany Showroom on Route 7, Latham, working to help clients organize their home this fall with custom built-ins, garages, mudrooms, and more. CaliforniaClosets.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at lglc.org. Once again, thanks to Fred, Bob, and Dale Isla for being here today. Greg Ward was a late scratch. He'll be back next time, I hope. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Hey, Jim Montier screened the calls. Nice job, your first day, and you did very, very well. I'm Ray Graff. We talked to Rick. Well, we heard an email from Rick Orlando earlier. He's going to be on this show, and you can hear him speak. And it's tough to get him to stop. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.